come in and sit with us. We're four friends talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Last evening we were invited over by a couple who are thinking about their retirement, right? And so they wanted to know how our experience was in working with, you know, the same employer, and also how things have been working with us in terms of how do we set ourselves up, how do we prepare, whatever. And then yesterday afternoon I was looking on Facebook and I saw this statement: I thought growing old would take longer. And it made me think about the fact that,
interesting,
did we do any planning for retirement, or did we do any plan for growing old? Like, and I thought, I wonder if that's a topic we should talk about. Did we have a plan for growing
old?
What
do you mean by,
had we thought about our...
It took longer.
Well, it took longer.
Growing old.
Yeah, we didn't realize we were old.
You thought it would take longer.
You thought it would take longer.
The quote is, I thought growing old would take longer.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, here we are,
we're 70s.
Old. Oh, yeah. I think everybody experiences that.
Yeah.
Like, how did I get here? Like, it just happened.
It just happened.
Because you never feel the age that you are.
I do.
I'm always... except
always.
For Jack.
Yeah, Jack.
Our three boomers and a doomer.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to have an alternative opinion here at the table, right? But
yeah.
But, you're right. I think I don't feel like I'm getting, you know, hitting close to 70, right? But in some ways it seems kind of weird to...
Oh, I'm well over that.
Yeah.
But when I knew I was getting old was when I laid down in the field near the gym in Camrose to stretch after running a little bit, and someone stopped their car, got out of the car, came over walking towards me and said, "Are you okay?"
Oh, yeah. And you're stretching.
Yeah. Yeah. I said, yeah, I think I'm fine.
Yeah.
God. Well,
that's like that joke that was going around on the internet a while ago. It says, if you're young and you fall down, people look and laugh. If you're old, they all run to hell.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I realized I was old and somewhat incapacitated when I had knee replacement and I had to use a walker, and I went to the grocery store and it wasn't the door wasn't working, the automated door wasn't working, right? And a fellow said, "Let me help you, ma'am. I'm sure it must be difficult with a walker, you know, at your age." And I was like, oh, I'm old. I thought, oh my gosh.
Yeah, the other incident comes to mind for me of trying to jump a fence in Kitchener. And I just impaled myself on the fence. My legs did not move as they should have.
Yeah, this did not happen before, but now...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't
jumped the fence. My legs used to go higher when I did this.
Yeah.
Well, I had a shock this year when I got my flu shot. And there, when I was coming out, there was a young... it's probably 10, just crying hysterically and visibly stressed by having to get his flu shot. And his mother was trying to work with him. And I said, you know, if I can do it, you can do it. And she turned to him and she said, see, even our seniors get shots. And I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
I was not comforting him as a senior. I was comforting him as, you know, it was just...
Yeah. I was complaining about being old one day, and one of my granddaughters said, "Oh, Grandma, you're a young senior. Don't worry. You have time."
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Well, I'm reminded a couple of years ago there was a news report, and it talked about a senior citizen being assaulted. And then it put the guy's age at about 59 or something. And I'm older than that. I'm going, oh my.
Yeah. He's old.
That's a senior citizen. The media has confirmed it. So, and I'm older than that. Yeah.
We just keep doing things because we think we're not old, right? And we just don't find that moment, right? That you know, sort of indicates that we are a bit older than we think we are.
I think I'm old every morning.
Yeah. You've always thought you were old.
I have a repeated track that goes on and on and on. Okay, what about today? How's it going to go, old man?
Oh.
But did you always feel that way, or is it more?
I felt that way for a long time, 20, 30 years.
Oh,
really?
Oh, okay.
Maybe not that long.
Oh, my gosh.
Since I started getting palpitations and couldn't play old-timers hockey anymore.
Yes.
That's when I felt old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew someone in Camrose. He was 75 and still playing old-timers hockey.
Yeah.
And I was kind of left by the way.
Yeah.
I still participate in some of the social activities, and that was nice, but...
But it's a... You mean, are you saying then that it's a physiological moment in time that indicates that you're old?
Well, I just timed out in terms of health.
Yeah.
So.
Right, okay.
So I just didn't want to chance it anymore.
It was health issues. You've had a lot of health issues.
You know, if you're palpitating while you're doing a rush on the ice.
it kind of affects
your
performance.
You don't want to go into cardiac arrest.
kidding, you don't. Yeah, it's just an interesting way to look at it, because I don't even think we even talked about growing old together before we were probably in our mid-50s, right?
Yeah.
That it sort of occurred to us that there were going to be a lot of things we wanted to still do and places we wanted to go, so we weren't really that old then, right? Like, we still had time, kind of. But now it feels like we're doing it in measured time, trying to decide, like, growing old is, what's the limitations of my physical being? What's the limitations of my emotional being? What's, you know, so I'm looking at that and saying, that's kind of a plan for growing old. What do we do next, right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the indicators for me of being older, of being an elder, I thought we weren't going to use the word senior anymore.
Elder.
An elder is intolerance. I'm growing increasingly friggin' intolerant.
Wow.
Because, you know, as years go by, or the horizons are closer and closer in terms of the end, it's time to say what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And now with what's happening all over, it's like, okay, do I continue to do that, or do I just go away and find an ice fishing hut and sit in it for the rest of my life?
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, sort of like that old man yells at clouds kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, turn into one of those people.
Like, if you haven't said it yet, it's time to say it, as far as I'm concerned.
Hmm.
And what's happening in the U.S., I don't know what forum there is to say it without being fearful of retaliation.
Well, I think that's the key, is the fear of retaliation. I think some of that aging piece tied in with that is when you get to a... Now, this may certainly apply to not to everyone, but you lose a certain sense of confidence. And so there's part of you that wants to, you know, just speak your mind, you know, be less tolerant. But there's also the sense that you are less able to defend yourself against pushback, and that creates a bit of a double whammy then.
I think it's that feeling vulnerable, and that's what you're talking about, Rick, is feeling vulnerable to all kinds of things, to marketing scams, to you know, not being able to stay caught up with everything that's happening technologically so that you can keep yourself safe online. And I think all of those things weigh on me in terms of, okay, you know, is our bank account safe, you know, and have I taken enough steps, and do I need to continue to do more to keep all of that safe? And I think all of those things become harder to manage as you get older, because I just don't have the capacity, or want to, really. I don't want to have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
To stay caught up with it and to stay in front of it.
For me, I guess also besides that sense of vulnerability, the sense of less of reduced resiliency. You know, yeah, I can bounce back from this. Yeah, I can take this on. It's a setback. But and some of that, I think, is because there's that short timeline. It's like, well, I don't have that time in my life to bounce back anymore. And then some of it is I also don't have the energy, you know, and the fortitude. Yeah.
Bouncing back.
So what? Resilience? That's a really interesting word, and I worked a lot with that word with my staff when I was working. What does it take to help us be resilient?
Yeah.
To the things that come our way.
Right.
That was in a working situation, but that does really applies to growing older as well. How do you keep your resiliency mm-hmm. to things that come your way without despairing and thinking it's the end of the world?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind, and we're living today and yesterday and the day before under the pall of those fires in Los Angeles, and if you watch any of it, it's absolutely traumatizing because people are standing in front of their burnt homes. They have no resilience. Mm-hmm. They're done.
Yeah.
You know, if their entire life saving was in the house that just burned to the ground, how can you talk about resilience?
Yeah, and often no backups or no supports, I understand.
Yeah.
I read a report, people using that as an example, fire insurance companies are just cutting off their fire insurance. Yeah. Oh, you just don't have it because you're in a high-risk area. And you go, well, now what do I do, right?
And that was the case already in Florida with flooding insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as climate change increased to take effect, one of the resilience, part of resilience might be appreciating where we are now, but not to gloat about it, but to do appreciate that we're living, as we talked about at breakfast the other morning, in a place that is relatively devoid of natural disasters, other than maybe increased tornadoes and field flooding. But it's mostly field flooding, which is not minor for the farmers, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But it, and maybe that's part of resilience, too, that the situations, the negative situations we're in or facing or experiencing, that somehow they can be mitigated or they can be managed somehow. And I think when things like that become unmanageable, that's often when we just lose all sense of hope and sense of resilience,
But again, we talk about that idea of resilience. It's reframing, right, our situation. And I think that's also something that's really important for us as we're growing older. How do we reframe our situation, our growing old? And we have to do this quite often, right? We have to adapt and reframe so much quicker than what we used to do, right? When we were younger, we seemed to have more resources within that could do that.
Well, yeah, and I think that's one thing that's a surprise as you get older. I always thought as you got older, you had more resources, maybe not physical ones, but you more say wisdom and that. And in fact, even if you have that, it doesn't seem to be the same strong resource that it should be, or maybe you just haven't reframed properly, and maybe that's part of the idea.
I think for me, the issue of resilience raises the issue of networking. And since we've moved around quite a bit, the networking is not as strong as I sense with you guys.
Yeah.
And now, with being somewhat fearful about saying anything on Facebook or any other groups I might be part of, that community with a small c, because it is remote, it is digital, may be retreating. Like when I suggested that I leave Facebook, I'm getting tons of people saying, I think I should have done this. I think I might do the same.
Yeah.
In fact, I did the same. I'm on Blue Sky. Here's my address.
Yeah.
And so that support is being eroded through what's happening in the U.S. and fear that's setting in at all socioeconomic levels, not even to mention the issue of climate disruptions.
Yeah.
But in some ways, that exact act of moving to another platform is reframing, showing resilience and adaptability.
It's doing something.
So it is doing something, right? Even if we want to sit back and be, you know, negative about whatever's happening in the world, we're still doing something, right? We're still thinking ahead about how might we mitigate, as you use that word, that situation, or reframe that situation, or build some resilience, because you're going to lose something, right? So what are you going to fill? What are you going to fill the gap with, right?
Well, and the whole reframing and resilience thing is based on what you believe about aging, I think, and what you believe about your world. Mm. So do you have a world positive view? Do you have a world negative view? What kind of a approach? Jack hates this because he thinks it's pop psychology, but it really is.
Positivism that'll sink us.
But it isn't positivism. It is really what we get in the media is being fed to us. And it is the breaking news, and it's the disasters of the world, and it's the stuff that sells. And when we consume that, we are missing a whole part of what is also out there for us, which is the good things happening in the world. And there are some.
And I think the other piece of that is that we have to be critical thinkers in order to understand the world. And if we're not doing that critique as we're seeing the breaking news or the disasters or whatever, I mean, it's not saying, oh, well, let's do this Pollyanna attitude or it's positivism. I don't think that's exactly the word that describes that. I think it's using that resource within us about critiquing the information that we're getting. And we need to do that in order not just to think about what we're feeling and rely on our own self, but to be seeking out others that we can have that conversation with to get a different perspective and maybe even get a new understanding. Who knows? Like, I just...
Yeah, there was a fellow the other morning, I think on CBC, talking, and he has, a website called Fix the Media, which sounds radical or kind of censorious, but basically he says there is so much in media that is all, like you said, negative and
fillers,
disaster and doom and gloom, and what is not reported is the positives. And he says on his site what he tries to do is not just go after media and complain about it, but actually post positive news features of what, and he gave a few examples, I'm sorry I can't think of them, but the idea there is that if there was more balance that came our way, perhaps we would have less of a sense of despair and less a sense of fatalism about it, that there is, in the midst of all that, there is still a lot of positive steps moving forward. We just often don't hear about it, and so we think it's not happening. So I think that's part of the reframing too. You know, what kind of influences are affecting us? What kind of critical thinking do we need to use to just kind of filter that out and gain a more balanced perspective? So
I'm not sure critical thinking is the issue.
No?
I mean, if you've got someone like Donald Trump who's threatening to annex our country at a point when we're very vulnerable without Trudeau's doing as well as he can as a lame duck prime minister, but he's threatening to annex our country, to absorb our resources, and that's simply objective reality. We have quotes from him that he will do that.
And but he's not saying joking. It isn't doing it, Jack. So I think that's the other thing we have to think about.
Well, we have to wait until the 20th of January to see.
Yes. And past that even.
He could totally ruin our economy with those.
He could, but we also have to see what he can do and what the world is going to do too. We can't just take...
The world is not going to touch him.
Well, we don't know. So, and I think that's how to reframe that too, right? I think we have to think about that.
Yeah. I guess my thought, that's where... In a way, critical thinking comes in, because some reports say already various governments are already looking at ways to protect themselves, to also, you know, if the tariffs come in, to retaliate, and to make sure that we're not caught out. So we don't know what those plans are, and maybe that's part of it.
He's a known quantity in terms of his buffoonery and his rhetoric, And there are movements and there are people who are working to contain that. And to and governments around the world are girding themselves for this next 4 years of probably unmitigated hell, but to constrain him and to block him. Biden is doing a bunch of things, what he can do to prevent some of the things he's saying he's going to do. So I think that we, back to critical thinking and back to news consumption, when we're consuming news, it's easy to become fearful and to become paranoid and to become afraid of what's going to happen. And those are real feelings, and yes, they do need to be addressed and dealt with. But those aren't the only feelings that we have. We have other feelings that can counterbalance those. And we need to, I think, sternly talk to ourselves about what it is we believe about the world. And I believe that inherently people are good people and will help. I mean, look at what's happening with the fires. People are coming from everywhere to help. They are containing the fires slowly but surely. They are, the government, the U.S. government is going to pay beyond the normal whatever time period it is, and they are, there is a resounding response to that disaster that is positive, that is helping, that is going to get people on their way to repairing and rebuilding their lives.
Yeah. And to balance out what their local situation is about, right? That it's not all about what the news is saying and it's not all about what the government is saying, but that somewhere in the middle we're hearing the stories that are going to help us to understand that. And I think that is our role, to be able to adapt in that and have those conversations, but that they would not be the only conversations.
But climate unraveling is not a matter of opinion.
No,
nobody's questioning that.
So the fact that the fires are a result of climate change, no one's disputing that.
Well, you've got a government coming in on the 20th who denies climate change exists.
Well, and that's, so at the federal level, maybe, but at every science institution, at every other level of political entity, there is a striving to make a difference.
And my fear is they'll be silenced. As many environmental scientists and climate change experts have been. They've been threatened and they've been silenced. And they're afraid for their jobs if they were ever to speak out what they really see is happening climate-wise.
Well, and then maybe they need to find other avenues. I don't know if this applies.
Yeah, like get a new job.
Well, perhaps. I was thinking this may not fit exactly, but, you know, for a number of years, there's always these voices that have been pushing so hard against solar energy. A lot of that comes from, say, the fossil fuel industry. And yet, every year, you see there are more and more solar energy and windmills being built and put out there. More and more EV cars are being manufactured and sold, despite everyone saying, well, these are not going to work and so on and so forth. So sometimes, and it's being done rather quietly, rather than people just standing up and sort of getting into a shouting match with the ones who are opposed. They just say, well, fine, and they build more, and this is cheaper energy, and look at it, it's making a difference. So maybe that's what I mean by an alternate route, rather than just getting into a shouting match, rather than just saying, well, we'll carry on here and we'll make a difference.
It's really hard, I think. So there's data to support what you're saying, Rick.
Yeah.
Sure. Yes. Somewhere. But it's really hard to find that. And being out of the workforce, I don't have access to some of the research engines that I used to have access to find that data. But there must be data there to support that. And I don't think that that data doesn't come through on our sort of news feeds, because it takes mm-hmm. too much analysis and it takes too much time to sort of do a comprehensive kind of picture. And again, I think mm-hmm. that's where the mm-hmm. critical thinking comes in. Where are people drawing their data from, and yep. what are they basing what they're saying on, and how can we research that to, I mean, again, we are vulnerable in terms of news, and we are mm-hmm. vulnerable in terms of fake news. And so mm-hmm. finding that data, I think, is important. And again, it's the belief that critical thinking and data-based decisions, evidence-based decisions, make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So as, again, you okay?
I'm gagging. No, I'm good.
Yeah. So,
oh, you're still married ahead. To me? I do not know.
carry on. See. Yeah.
So the critical thinking part,
yeah.
And the ability to access, like I said, real data and real information to make your own decisions and your own conclusions, come to your own conclusions about what's real out there, I think becomes harder and harder, especially as we get older.
Yeah, I think so too, because we don't have the access to the information.
And we're sort of out of the pulse of, in some ways, out of the pulse of where to get that data.
Yeah, yeah. I think so too. We also don't have a routine that sets it up so that we have access to that information on a regular basis too, right? I mean,
and there might be places to sign up to get ongoing bulletins and yep. stuff. And I know you guys are on some. I have been on some.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's, I don't know. I don't know how to overcome that.
There's an unfortunate confluence happening. We're living through the end of the fossil fuel era. So I think you're right, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unstoppable, the movement to alternative energies. But at the same time, we're living through an era where truth and falsehood are increasingly difficult to discern, especially compounded with the emergence of artificial intelligence that is in the hands of unscrupulous people who are intent on disinforming and lying over and over again, just at a time when we need truth the most, especially about climate change. So it's a real dilemma we're in.
I guess I would challenge that, Jack, and I'll tell you why I think the idea that we're living in a time of untruth. We have all been living in a moment of untruth for many years. We've just started to sort of notice it a little bit more. But I can still recall stories of my childhood, 5, 6, 7 years old, of hearing untruths in a community. If you think about all the stuff that's been hidden behind and managed and manipulated as truth, it has happened for every generation. We just seem to be more sort of hyper sensitive to it or whatever, but we have been in lots of generations of untruth, Jack.
But I
think about the indigenous history.
Okay.
I think
good
about
point.
The immigrant history, I can think about all kinds of things. We have all lived in moments of untruth through all of our lives. It just seems like we're more hypersensitive to it right now.
Well, the capacity for the spreading of untruth is unprecedented in human history, given the communication networks we have.
Well, maybe it is, but if you think about Nazi Germany and how they managed to use propaganda through film and everything, it happened to whole generations of people there and allowed a government to do those things.
Right.
So I think, I'm not sure that that's something I feel comfortable saying, that we are in some special kind of moment in our lives. That
I have access here to a library of information that no other human being prior to our generation has ever had access to.
Yeah.
And I'm holding up my phone.
Yeah, but I still think it's something we have to be cautious about, thinking that we are in a special moment in our time.
Human nature hasn't changed.
Yeah.
But information networks have changed. And that's what Harari, in the book I was reading called Nexus, argues vehemently, and he's written three or four books. With AI now, we have the emergence of a technology that is able to misguide, misinform the entire global population.
But that's,
and that's scary.
That's looking at one piece of it. Yes, that's there. Mm-hmm. That is there.
Well, it is. It might not be one piece
news
to you.
News networks will
It
be
might not be one
on
piece
it.
To you, Jack, but it is just one piece to other people. I think that's the thing that we have to realize about our own perspectives and our own history and our own experiences. They're one perspective.
So you don't think that untruth and disinformation is being maximized now as no other time in human history?
Nope. I'm actually not sure about that.
Wow.
I'm not sure about that because I don't have enough information about it, Jack. And I read some of it, but I'm not going to be totally into that center of trying to figure that knowledge out. I keep going back to the historical perspective, wondering if there were other times that there were, but we don't know that unless we go back into history as well. So yeah, I'm not sure. And I think it's not to put blinders on for myself, it's to find the balance of what information is truth and what isn't. And sometimes it's...
We've talked about how history, in terms of repeating itself, because we don't learn from that history, is critical. And I think that's what you're saying, really, in some ways, Jack. We maybe aren't paying enough attention to this whole disinformation side.
Potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Side. And it again, I think there are people fighting against that, and I think it behooves us to, like I was saying before, do that research to try to find the data that is true. And I believe that gets harder for the reasons that you're saying, but I don't believe that it's a fait accompli. I believe that we do have that capacity to uncover truths and dispute the lies.
One of the forums I've been on, and this really scared me the other day, suggested that the only truth to be found is face-to-face conversations, not on the telephone, not on the internet, and these people were squirreling away, they're afraid. So I think that's probably true.
So
that's the only truth we can discern is when we look someone in the face and we have them as friends and we know that they are truth-telling. Otherwise, it's a fog of misinformation and of lies and distortion. I mean, one of the magical tricks...
Is that your viewpoint?
One of the magical tricks of Trump is that he takes a tiny bit of truth and distorts it so that it becomes seductively attractive.
But some people, not everybody gets attracted by that, Jack.
No, true.
That's the other piece that I think we have to keep... Reminding ourselves.
Keep holding up is that it's not,
yeah.
He influences some people, but not everyone. There's a whole country that is fighting against him and his ways.
But I know I'm not alone in terms of people starting to quietly gather together and whisper that some form of resistance needs to take place. Just like in Nazi Germany, not to compare Trump to Hitler, though others are making that comparison, and it's probably far too early, and I hope he's not. But there is So I'm just saying that it's going to become far more ubiquitous, this misinformation, than we could have ever imagined. And the academics, you know, who were my colleagues, are... God bless them for staying in the academia because they're trying to discern what is fakery and what is plagiarism. And mm-hmm. AI is making it almost impossible. And there's no help from the industry itself.
But then they
in
have
helping
to,
with that.
Yeah, then they have to rejig how they evaluate.
Yeah, they can no longer have submissions of papers.
Yeah.
It's all done mm-hmm. in person. You write answers.
Yeah.
Longhand.
Yeah, but it's doable. It takes more work, but it's doable.
So Jack, what is the underlying fear that you have? Because you're talking from very much a fear-based position.
Yeah, I'm afraid. I don't deny that.
What of what? What are you afraid of? What is
that? I won't get across the border again. Mm. I've said that because I've publicly on Facebook and elsewhere maligned the would-be leader that is coming on January 20th, and that we move to a conservative government here in Canada that shuts down the CBC, one of our sources of information. And if that happens, and I can't see it, CBC has been attacked from right-wing forces for many years now. And if we get a right-wing premier or a right-wing prime minister, we are in serious trouble. So it's a catch-22. I'll just repeat what I said. It's a catch-22 because you want more information. So I seek information through the vehicles I have, like television, radio, CBC, Facebook, etc. But yet you're traumatized by it. So what do you do? Do you just not get information? What do we do?
Well, I think here's what I'm going to use as a specific example of how there has been untruth floating around, falsehood, for, I would say, millennia. And that is the status and the role of women. And now recently it is coming to light through, say, the Me Too movement, how devastating, how misogynistic that whole patriarchal approach is. And the Me Too movement, yeah, there's a lot of strong pushback against it, but there's still a lot that's exposing about all of the negative positions and systems that put women in secondary and females in secondary roles or diminish their voice. And so in a way, when Elaine mentioned that there's been falsehood, not just more recent, that was a whole system set up based on a ton of false assumptions. Women are weak, women are stupid, women are not full persons. For centuries. Mm-hmm. And it's only finally now that that's being exposed and blown apart. And again, I'll say lots of pushback, lots of negative stuff, lots of, you know, incel websites and so on the dark web. But on the other hand, it's still moving forward and more people are saying, hey, yeah, you know, something is really, really wrong here and has been wrong for centuries. And they're exposing, whether you want to talk about political systems or social customs or religions and so on, they're being called to account. So I think to some degree, some falsehoods in our world have been pervasive for a long time. There's new ones coming out, like you're right about climate change. But I think that example I use gives me hope that there is truth and fact out there, and it's a hard struggle, but it can come to be.
And it's being exposed. Yeah. And we can be part of how it's all being exposed.
Sure.
We can be a part of that, of exposing it. And mm-hmm. and I and in some ways, Jack, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to expose the falsehood of those truths of, I'm still talking, of climate change.
I'm just trying to survive. I'm not trying to spread truths.
But I think by the fact that you're speaking, you are. And expressing concerns, I think your voice is important.
But here's there are undoubtedly historical inequities, deep and profound, that we've lived through in our years and that millions have lived through prior to us. But these are unprecedented times, is all I'm saying. And
but
you're saying no.
Yeah, I'm
so
saying
that's
no, too.
That's something we'll have to disagree on. Mm-hmm. That there is something uniquely foreboding that's happening globally in terms of suppressing the truths about climate unraveling.
But the truth is there, and people do their...
People are trying.
It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's not a blanket. We know there is science that proves that we are in the effects of climate change. The fires are an effect of climate change. The weather pattern changing is an effect of climate change. We have temperatures now that are, the Earth is warmed up so much that we are, I don't think there's any going back now. So we know that. We know that around this table. People who mm-hmm. aren't in science, we know that. So it is not under the table. It is not being lied about. It is, the truth is there. Some people are choosing not to believe it. And that is where I have trouble, when they choose not to believe mm-hmm. the science. And I hear your fear about, okay, we have people in power who are not going to do anything about climate change. That may be so on a geopolitical level, but on a local, on a provincial, on a grassroots, on many, many other levels, people are doing something. I agree.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
And do we need governments to buy in, or do we need the people to buy in? And that for me is the question. I can't do anything about the people that are in power except vote for who I think would be the best leader. That's about all I can do. But I can do something about helping others understand what I believe about climate change and what I believe about women's position mm-hmm. in society and what I believe about other things that are near and dear to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can still talk about those and I can still influence people.
Yeah, and I guess I go back to just an example of your mom, right? And she, you know, you talk about unprecedented times. She said it was... Rick's mother, yeah, said it was unprecedented times during the war, in which all the men went to war and nobody was running the church. So the women stepped in and they ran the church.
And the community.
And the community and families.
And the industry.
And everything else, right? And she called that unprecedented times. And she said, and then we came to North America and things changed, right? Of course, you know, in the 50s, women were to be at home and women were to just be taking care of the home, and the man went out and did things. And she said it was frustrating to sort of see that. And then also she said to see that no women were involved in the leadership of the church, and was so excited when the ordination of women happened. For her, that was like the women got to get the church back, that they got to get their role back, you know. So I again, I'm going to go back to, like, we're all... it might be unprecedented times in for certain things, like it is unprecedented times for the climate change and for some untruths and everything, but it's not unprecedented times about every aspect of our life.
Yeah.
There are still some other pieces that are really great, right? And maybe that's from my own personal perspective. You know, I think about aging, right? And how there was a time in which everybody was shoved into a senior's home and kind of forgotten, right? And we can stay in our own homes now, and we can have some independence, and we can still drive our car and, you know, do those kinds of things. And so
we know more about aging and how to stay healthy while aging with mm-hmm. exercise and nutrition, and because the belief was, I'm retired, I can sit back and I don't have to do anything anymore.
Right, yeah.
And so going into, like, lodges and assisted livings and that kind of thing, where you went in very healthy.
Yes.
As opposed to now, where you go in when you actually need the support.
Yeah. Well, and you signed up in your gym, our gym, for
a balance class.
You know, to how to sustain and maintain balance, which is a big problem for people who are seniors.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, there are moments in my pessimistic world mm-hmm. where I am appreciative of the fact that here I am, 74, and still alive and relatively healthy. Mm-hmm. When the longevity in other historical moments, like during the Roman Empire, 6th century AD, the average lifespan was probably in the late 40s. And so I've lived almost double what most people have lived down through history. Mm-hmm. So I'm not unappreciative of that. Mm-hmm. It's just getting tiring.
Yeah. Well, that's a part of the aging that we can't.
That's a whole different conversation. Of
like someone said that we're living too. Oh, someone in the medical profession said that the problem is that people are living too long.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
So the medical profession is putting all of its resources into us aging old farts.
Well, and actually, I had that confirmed by the teacher who was the facilitator of this balance class. We were talking about her qualifications for teaching the class, and she said, well, right now I'm working on a certificate in geriatric health, kinesiology, and I was like...
Which never existed.
Never existed before. I thought, well, you're going to spend all your time learning about geriatric kinesiology, right?
Well, in Kitchener, I was referred to a geriatrician.
I know, I just, yeah.
And I thought, a geriatrician? Really?
But yeah. It is going to change, right? It is going to change because we are the baby boom generation, right? And the boomers are dying off. We are the bottom end.
We are the youngest.
We are the younger group of that cohort, right? And so pretty soon they're going to start putting their energies into another aspect of...
another generation.
Another demographic, right?
Yeah, but they're going to get older too, so...
Well, and even women's health right now is just in... There's not a lot of stuff that's out there about women's health issues, right? It's more general, geriatric.
In older women.
So in older women, yeah.
That's so. Right.
So we're cultural residue.
Now, explain that. I want to know what you mean by cultural residue.
I don't like that reframe.
It means that at some point, I mean, there is a growing resentment I've heard, again, information or disinformation, that there's a resentment amongst young people of us continuing in our professions, which none of us here are, taking places that could otherwise be filled by young people. And we have caused the almost unstoppable now climate collapse.
Mm-hmm. And the healthcare collapse. And
the healthcare collapse. Yeah. So there's lots on our shoulders.
But not personally on our shoulders as our demographic has really shifted our world kind of on its side in some ways, right? That aging process. And if somebody had said to me, even 15 years ago, you should be planning for a different future as you age, right? I wouldn't have thought about that. I would have thought, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law made it to 95. I'll be fine, you know, like whatever age, right? But we actually do have to think about that because in some ways, is the healthcare system going to keep us safe, keep us healthy, right? Is the climate action and climate change, is it going to make us safe? Are we going to be in a place where, how is that going to impact us in terms of being seniors in a building on a 14th floor and there's no water, right? Or the air conditioning dies, you know what I mean? Like, so there's some things we do have to be thinking about that are in that respect for planning for aging. So
planning for eventualities, I guess, is part of it. It's part of that whole, what are the risks and how can I mitigate them as I get older? Doing things like moving to one-floor dwellings before you really need to and making sure that the wills are done and all the financials are in order. Eating right and exercising. And most importantly, I think, having fun. Mm-hmm. Then we'll never be older before we expect to be, right? Mm-hmm. And if we are, then I guess we'll be ready for it.
Sure. And we could say thank you for tuning in today.
If you've hung with us this long,
yeah, we will.
You're our hero.
Yeah, stay tuned. Okay.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RSS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral four, followed by Seniors in the Building, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.